Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome in to Sports Daily. Happy New Year. Glad to be back with you here on the airwaves all over the place, all the ways you bring in the show. It is 2026, and it is one of those shows where, we have, quite frankly, too much to get to on a Monday. It's been a scattershot couple of weeks of when we've been on the air, but all signs point to a great new year in the sports world. Was it a great sports weekend? It was a busy sports weekend. We'll get to it all. Jacob Albrock here alongside TJ Cleland. Max Power producing for us. 869-1240 is the number to call. You can also reach us on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X, all the different ways you listen to the show. Thanks for watching us as well on 12 News Connected, and thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app. It's, of course, the weekend we really get rolling into conference play in the college basketball world. The second conference game for Wichita State does not go well after the first had us pretty excited, quite frankly. But we'll dig into that. Paul Mills should be joining us here in the first hour. So we'll have that for you. It was also a busy football weekend. The CFP on to the semifinals. We will discuss maybe a little bit of that today, but certainly throughout the week. The NFL regular season is in the books, including, of course, for the Kansas City Chiefs. The playoffs are set. Travis Kelce talked after the game. We'll dig into all of that. Josh Briscoe, we expect sometime in the second hour. It's all what's on tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, where you can drink Buffalo Sweat and help Buffalo right here in Kansas in January and February at all three WBC locations. A portion of proceeds from every draft pint of Buffalo Sweat Oatmeal Cream Stout will help support Maxwell Wildlife Refuge, WBC Pizza and Beer made here. TJ, good morning. How are you?
Hello. That was a very 2025 sports weekend. You know, everybody makes a New Year's resolutions that they want to be better in the new year, in the 2026, and our sports teams did not follow suit. We went 0-4 this weekend.
You're talking about Chiefs and college basketball, of course.
Yes.
On the men's side. I think I sent that. It's like that shocker loss especially felt like it felt like it was 2025. Shockers back home Wednesday to try to bounce back. Just a really disappointing outcome after a really fun outcome against UAB to open conference play. A huge, massive comeback is followed by blowing an 18-point second half lead. That is just brutal for Wichita State. Now, I think the question becomes, how much does this matter? And this is a question for Wichita State, probably in Kansas. At least we hope Kansas. So, you know, like, Wichita State's going to have to win the conference tournament to get into the playoff, right? We know that. And so for me, like, big picture, how much does it matter? Well, I think it matters for Paul Mills and his legacy and finishing high in the conference this year. But in reality, it's all about what they're going to be able to do at the end of this thing. So I'm curious to hear from him. What can you work on and do to avoid these stretches of games where they just can't seem to get it going at all? It's like everything just stops for 10 or 12 minutes in a game. Because when they're, you know, outside of that, they look good. And you know, what can you do? You split two road games to open conference play. Just was like the order was weird, right? Charlotte's not that good. That was disappointing. Kansas kind of the same way. We assume sort of that Kansas is going to have a good enough resume to be an at-large in the NCAA tournament. So it's like, how good can they be by the end of it? These individual outcomes annoy us, and certainly there's a mountain of things to talk about with Kansas. How much does that really matter, right?
They matter. We do this all the time.
They do. I agree. I'm not trying to downplay them. I'm getting there. For Kansas State, they really matter because Kansas State's going to have to build a resume still.
Yes, correct.
But so for Kansas and Wichita State, it's like these outcomes are infuriating. But, you know, you have like the big picture, like within the program, it all still has to be big picture focused.
Yeah,
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. We're getting to the 2025 Chiefs syndrome on these, and we do it all the time. And the Chiefs are the perfect analogy of, like, they lost to the Jags, but I mean, how much does it really matter that they lost to the Jags? Right. You know, like, Wichita State lost to Charlotte. How much does it really matter that they lost to Charlotte? At some point, it has to matter, and it's a conference game. Like, losing to DePaul because you missed 15 free throws is, I mean, you can't do anything about the free throws. You know what I mean? But, like, the way they lost to Western Kentucky and the way they lost to St. Mary's and the way that they've lost every game so far has the common theme where they go on a big run, the other team goes on a big run that's bigger than theirs, basically. And this one was kind of backwards of what we've seen, which is interesting in itself. But, you know, give credit to Charlotte. They were able to stop Kenyon Giles, who was doing everything for Wichita State. And the biggest question that they go from here is, how do you find a way to win whenever Kenyon Giles only scores single digits in the second half?
Yeah, it's a good question. Caron Boyd picked it up very late, but it was very late. I think, you know, we are seeing some positives there. The free throw bug seems to be gone. They're rebounding well. I just like the offense, and I think you've got it spot on. The disappearing act of the offense for those stretches in a game has to be different. I think for a while, and I still feel this way, but you're relying on a young player. Like, that's to me where TJ Williams has to shine a little bit. Like, get the ball in his hand, attack the basket. The other team has locked in. And the other thing is, too, like, Giles will have off shooting nights. We've seen that this year.
I mean, we've seen it in TJ Williams stepped up and they beat Northern Iowa. Like, you know, Giles wasn't making 8 threes during that stretch of non-con games where they played well. TJ Williams was, I mean, maybe the number one option, if you want to put it that way. So they have the options. They just need to figure out quickly, and now they're in conference play, of how they do that again.
Yeah, they scored 80 in the game, so it wasn't like it was a bad, as before overtime. It wasn't like it was a bad offensive performance, but it's Giles is, I don't know, we'll have to ask Paul Mills this, I suppose. It's like a double-edged sword. Like, when he's hot like that, it's like, okay, let's go. But then it almost becomes too reliant on that. It certainly did in the final possessions of that game.
It's honestly, and we'll talk about this, it's the same thing as KU to a different magnitude, but same conversation is the fact of the, and we'll dig into this KU, but I mean, the blanket statement that you can put over that, and I know it sounds like we're being dramatic about this, but if Darren Peterson is healthy, they win the game. Darren Peterson played in the game. He wasn't healthy. He had to come out of the game. It's unfortunate, whatever happened, but like, they are a different team with him on the court than when they are without the court, and they're a worse team. Of the three, they're the worst whenever they're in the stage of limbo of wondering what's going on. You know, when Darren Peterson plays, the Jayhawks know he's going to be the volume shooter. When he doesn't play, they found ways to go beat Tennessee without Darren Peterson. They almost beat UConn without Darren Peterson. And then when they're in the limbo stage of, is he going to play? Is he going to be able to go late in the game? Then it's like, okay, well, what do we do now? You know? And like that's a whole conversation to get into.
And we will. Rick says he's a Kansas fan and they just have to shut him down. It's not going to work. It's not fair to the rest of the team. It's been a bad investment. It's bad luck. I think there's a lot of KU fans feeling that way.
It's bad luck for sure.
I think there's still time for them. I think they're going to have to get very creative. I do think there's a way to work through it. I don't think you just can turn down 23 points and whatever it was.
It's still such an interesting conversation because every time he plays, there's no question that he's the best player in college basketball.
Yeah, I guess, that offense comes through. But we'll get into both of those. K-State, probably a little less interesting this weekend in their loss against BYU.
You feel the best about them, and they lost by double digits.
I know. I don't know what people's expectations were for that. But we'll cover it all, plus the Chiefs, plus Travis Kelce. Try to get to some CFP. It is a busy day on Sports Daily. Stick with us.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in here to Sports Daily. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a great supporter of the program. Popped in this weekend for the simulator. First time I think that I've swung a club in about 3 months, and there were some rough moments. I'm not sure I had a good iron shot all day, but that's what it's there for, right? These cold months are here. Although it was plenty warm to go out and play golf, and lots of people were. Simulator gives you a chance to just kind of keep in tune and do those things. They've got two of them, beer, food, all the stuff there for you. Give Crestview a call. Ask about all the different kinds of memberships that they have available and tell them we sent you here from Sports Daily. All right, welcome back in. Let's talk KU. So Darren Peterson is, we know what he is when he's out there. That's not the problem, right? 26 points, 23 minutes. 23, I believe, in the first half. And just instant explosion and offense, and it happens again. Happened again. He had the same flare-up. I don't know what it is. I don't think he knows what it is. I don't think they know what it is. That was probably, I don't know, it felt as optimistic about his ability to get out there as they've had maybe since the opening weeks of the season leading up to that game, and it flared up again. And so, others have brought it up. We've had people here bring it up already this morning. Are they better off without him? I would absolutely say the answer to that is no. They're not better off without him. I think what's going to become the challenge is, and I'd hope that they'd been able to figure this out leading into conference play, because this is what we've seen every game. How do you quickly pivot to having and not having him? And I know that's not like an easy ask, and it may not be something they figure out until the tournament, you hope, but how do you become the team that has played without him, and how do you become the team that has him, both exactly. within the same game? Because that's exactly. probably what's going to have to happen.
It's hard to do because, that's what I was bringing up in the last segment, is that, imagine, you're Bryson Tiller, because whenever we didn't see Darren Peterson, Bryson Tiller looked awesome. Like him and Flory were the reason they were winning basketball games. Whenever Darren Peterson's out there, Bryson Tiller turns a lot more into, I'm going to get some rebounds and we're going to make this thing work and get the ball back to Darren because he's got 25 points. And then if he goes out like he did yesterday, trying to switch back into, okay, I need to start shooting the ball after I haven't really, shot a three all game. Bryson Tiller would shoot some corner threes, everything like that. And it's just different the way that it works. And it's, on paper, it should be good to have that because, as I said, they were a team that was able to beat Tennessee, almost beat UConn, playing some really tough games. They almost beat Duke without him. And, if you can find a way to replicate that in a game where he's playing, they've got to figure out that recipe because Darren Peterson's not going to be able to play 40 minutes, probably even in March at this point. It's whatever it is, it's they're going to be cautious with it, even more cautious because this was the most optimistic that they were. And all accounts were barring any setbacks. He's going 100, he's going, he's here. And there's a setback.
Yep. And it's the same setback. And that is, and again, this is where I know KU fans are angry. I get it because we can all see it. Or we watch him play. I think anger feels a little bit misguided because again, I don't think Peterson's doing this on purpose. And I think even the anger at his camp, which has gotten a lot of run the last couple of weeks, wanting to hold him out. Do you not understand now why they want to be so cautious with it?
Yeah. You know what I mean? There was I don't know if you saw this. Devin Neal actually chimed in on this. And he said basically along the lines of, I lived this with Jalen Daniels and you guys acted the same way, that Jalen Daniels was a pansy and he was faking and he was going to transfer and he didn't care about KU football because he was hurt. He's like, injuries are weird and nobody understands what they're like. And somebody replied and said something along the lines of we're not upset about that. We're upset that it's not coach self calling the shots. It's his parents calling the shots is what. And he said, listen, guys, if I was hurt, I would hope my parents would tell them not to play me either. You don't want to play hurt. That's what it is. And, I don't think – and the thing that, the conspiracy theorists and fans that just look and see how much money he's making to, sit on the bench because he's hurt, probably think that Darren Peterson's parents and him are going back under closed doors and like rubbing their hands together and like, yeah, like we got him. Like hook, line, and sinker. Like, no, they're being cautious because they don't want their number one draft pick son to play hurt. And that's the hard part of this is they want to be cautious, and KU wants to be as cautious as they can. But at some point, you know, you'd like to see him play a full game.
Well, right. It's that, and the reality is like he's awesome. They're 10-4, despite dealing with this essentially in every game of this season. They have huge wins on their schedule. They are top 25 right now in the AP and every metric that you can look at. It's like, what is the expectation? And I think, you know, the expectation with him there is very, very, very high. I think we've seen good things out of Kansas without him there, but Kansas is not winning a national championship without him there. So, like, which would you rather have? Would you rather have a team that is floating right around the top 25 that probably finishes, I don't know, fourth or fifth in the Big 12 and gets a bid into the NCAA tournament? Or would you rather see the team with the upside that could make a run to the Final Four if Peterson was healthy? And I think right now people are angry and they're confused by it. And it's just like it's the first game of the Big 12 schedule. That whether it's, you know, 25 minutes of Peterson a game or not, they're going to have to, you got to allow them the time to try to figure out, okay. Like, I think the expectation at this point should be Darren Peterson will give you 20 to 25 minutes in, I don't know, 60% of the Big 12 games.
I think
and how
that
do
is,
you work with that? How do you use that?
I know.
Right.
I think that's the expectation by all accounts of what Bill Self said after the game. And even in prior games, that's what they're going to do is find a way to play him 20 minutes. And he said that after the game is that he was on a minutes restriction. And he played all of his minutes in the first half then? It's like, I don't think that's – I have to think something happened where he was going to play more. You know, yeah. Like that's the weird part about this stuff. And I think that is where all of the emotion comes from the fans. Of, as we've said, like the messaging of all this stuff, it's just gasoline on a fire, basically. Like and it's tough. And you can't have Bill Self go out there and just say, yeah, he's not going to play. I don't know.
It's because they don't know, right?
I know they don't know. I mean, would you rather have Bill Self go onto a post game press conference and just say, I don't know, guys, we're just going to try. We'll see what happens.
And the other thing, like if it was a glass slipper answer of, well, we'll pay him 12 minutes in the first half and 12 minutes in the second half, but it's not like that. It's not that simple. Like they think he's good. I don't think his flare-ups are happening because he's playing, you know, the 23rd minute of, exactly. Like, it's coming. It's happening.
And if he's and how is a basketball coach, if you've got a guy that has scored 30 points in 20 minutes of play, do you not just say, like, you want to keep going? Like, you want to keep playing? You know what I mean? Like, you've got to do whatever's going to give your basketball team the best chance to win. And if he's practicing in full and he looks good in the first half, you know, you got to – keep trying. Just say, like, okay, he's back. We were fine. Like, that's a conference game. You got to go win, you know, and they didn't. And everything is now turned into this conversation again.
And UCF's good, and it was on the road, and it was a tight game. And I thought that their fight to get back in it at the end there was impressive. There was definitely a moment where it looked like it was just going to run away from them, and it didn't, and they got it back in. I think, you know, how do you flip a switch? How do you flip a switch if you're Kansas from having Peterson to not having Peterson? Because it really is two kind of different teams. And that's not a knock on anybody. It's just, it is what it is, right? To me, there's so much more upside, obviously, when he's there. But they did figure out a way to, you know, to get things done without him. Okay, how can you tap into that within the same game, I think, becomes... And I also... I do think that they can, right? I think it's possible. I think some other players are going to have to do some things that they probably never had to do, which is take a step back and then immediately be ready to put on to punch the gas.
Yeah. That's what Melvin Council tried to do. Melvin Council looked great.
He's going to have to, right? Like, he's going to have to be that guy. And maybe it's as simple as and it's a big ask because he's a freshman and he doesn't have all the time in the world to do it. But Darren Peterson, what if your role changes a little bit? Like, what if it's not like all the easy offense for you, which has been your entire basketball career? And it's obvious to why that is, because it is easy for you. What if we utilize you more a little bit as a distributor and kind of change that off? I don't know what it is. That's why Bill Self's one of the best in the business to try to figure it out. It's unfortunate. It sucks. He's awesome when he's out there, and he's just unfortunately can't get through this injury. I think that Devin Neal stuff is interesting. And I think fans, like, guys, the player's hurt. Like, he could easily just not play, right? He could easily just be hurt and not play at all. And I just can't believe that so many people would rather have that. I wouldn't at all. I'd like to see him play.
If I had to take a stab here, I'd say if he wasn't so clearly a one and done and like obvious one and done, I think that they may have shut him down. But I think that there is a little bit, and maybe he would have wanted to say like, it's like, we'll try again next year. Like, this is annoying. It's happening every single game. Like, shut me down for a couple of months. Excuse me. Shut me down for a couple of months, and we'll try it in March. But I think that he knows, like, man, I've only got 30 games at KU. Like, I feel like I should try to play, you know?
Well, he likes it there. Like, he's clearly, like, he's having a good time. He's been a steward of the university, all those other things. There is going to be the factor, too, of as we watch BYU beat K-State by 10. 83-73, and DeBanza goes for 24 and looks good. Like, it's a good class. It's not just Peterson. It's also a good class. And there's going to be, I would think, at some point, some motivation to just to be able to play through it on his end too. Like, I got to get out there and show everybody that I'm fine.
I know. Like, that's the one thing. And we talk about it every week with Shreyas about, like, if you are the, I don't even know who's bad in the NBA this year, the number one pick, and you are looking at these guys, it's like, man, do I want the guy that played 35 minutes in every game or the guy that missed 15 and never played a full game? Like, obviously, Peterson's got the skills that he should be the number one pick. But, like, I mean, we've seen this story so many times in the NBA. You think about Greg Oden as the guy that stands out, like, immediately. It's like, this happens so many times. Like, it's – and it's a risk that you may want to take because he's that good, and somebody will take the risk, whether that be one, two, for three, or four.
Sure. Because they can just shut him down for a while.
Exactly.
Like, they're not – right. They don't
but have – but for a guy – for I mean, for these guys, like, the number one pick versus the number two pick is a big deal. And like, he wants to be the number one pick. And you'd have to think that, like, you have to show them that, like, I'm healthy. Like, I'm fine. Like, this is a you know, this is a stepping stone, and I'm getting over it. And when you get to the NBA, it's not going to matter because you can't shut him down. So that's the difference between taking him at number two. Like, sure, whatever, I'll shut him down anyways. If you're taking him at number one, though, over to AJ DeBonsta, you're going to want to know that. I have to imagine, and I can't believe there's not more chatter about it.
Well, that because it's this is the other part to people. Like, it's way too early. It's January 5th, right? Like, that's it's frustrating if you've followed along with it every week with a microscope like we have, because you're just trying to like wait. But the reality is the NBA draft's not for 5 months. He's shown you enough when he has played to see it. Like, that's not the question. It's just, what is this ailment and can he get through it? The unfortunate part is now, like, all those stretches, all those very obvious stretches to shut him down and rest him up, those are all gone now. There is no more like obvious, oh, well, we got this nice 3 week break here before conference play, or, oh, it's, you know, these games don't really matter. Oh, it's just a holiday tournament.
I think we haven't even talked about that part of it. That may be one of the most frustrating parts of this as well, is the fact that they did shut him down for 3 weeks, basically. Right. Like, he hadn't played in a month and it still happened. Like, what is it that's made? And again, we're not Sports Daily doctors here. Like, we have no idea either, but like, it's just, you know, want to pull your hair out type of stuff.
It is. And nobody has the answer. Darren Peterson doesn't, Bill Self doesn't, his parents don't, obviously the trainers and doctors don't. And now it's just an adjustment period of, okay, why not just assume he's going to give you 20 minutes a game the rest of the way? Cause that's kind of where I'm at. He'll give you 20 minutes a game in the games that he can play. How do you channel both versions of KU that we've seen this year within a game? That's the challenge now. And I know that's not easy. It's a challenge now, though, for the coaching staff. How do you get both versions of KU to play within the same game. I do think we saw it just a little bit toward the end of UCF. I do think they flipped the switch back. How do they do it? Right away. Can you utilize Darren Peterson and make him just a second half player? What if you just don't play him in the first half and then you play him in the second half, right? Like, what? I don't,
they're just,
I don't know the answers to it. I really like, it's not right now. I don't think Bill Self does either. He's trying to work through it. I think maybe we can all agree, whether we agree on they should just shut it down, which I don't agree with at all because he's way too good. Maybe we can all agree with the start a game, but not finish a game methodology. Maybe there is some ways to work around that. More limited minutes in the first half, whatever it might be, just to try to see if you can get him to the end of a game. We'll find out. Their next game comes at home, comes against TCU. TCU showed us this weekend they're pretty good. The Big 12 is never going to not have a difficult game, and that's coming up next on tomorrow night. 8 o'clock. It's the late window. Darren Peterson, all alone on ESPN. Or will he be? Will he not play? We should find out
like
today.
That game, that's what I was, you know, going through, making a schedule for this week. And it's like, you know, KU-TCU isn't really that hot button of a game. But it's like every game right now is what is they going to say in the post game? Because you don't, like, it's just an ever-changing story. And the games don't matter. You know, the biggest story is going to be the biggest story every game now.
Yeah, the games are going to matter. I mean, KU still does have to collect enough wins to make sure that they're safe.
I'm saying more so that, like, Bryson Tiller can hit a full court shot at the buzzer for the win, and the first question will still be, well, how's Darren Peterson feel after
that? Well, right. You know? We've seen Melvin Council just go ham, and it's like, oh, cool. But is Peterson good? Like, are we good?
And it is. It's the biggest question, and that's what we're supposed to do. Like, that's right, what everybody wants. That's what...
It's not unique to only this. The Chiefs just had one of the worst seasons, and we want to know about Travis Kelce, right?
Exactly.
It doesn't matter what else is happening. How's Mahomes' rehab going?
Like, exactly.
That's fine. Like that, it's fine. They just need to. How do you win games when he's not there? And how do you quickly pivot to that philosophy as soon as it happens? Real quick on K-State. Look, they didn't cover the number. I didn't have any expectation for them to win that game, even at home. I don't think this team is as good as I had hoped, unfortunately. But I think they have enough flash. PJ Haggerty's a really good player. I hope they can collect enough wins to, you know, finish 6th, 7th in the league and maybe get there and be able to get a tournament bid. Now joining us, Wichita State head coach Paul Mills, the Shockers in the routine in some ways of conference play. It was always going to be, coach, a tough way to start conference play with two road games. Boy, it sure looked like for a minute it was going to be 2-0. What a strange dynamic. You have the huge comeback in the first one, and then you guys let one slip away in the second one. How do you like break all that down and decompress it now as you guys get to come back home?
Yeah, you wake up the next morning and you figure out what the next right thing to do is. And, I know you use the word slip away. I mean, yes, but, you know, early leads in general don't mean anything if you can't defend and rebound. And it was our worst defensive performance on account of it was our worst rebounding performance. And just that – We're better than what we showed. Obviously, we had a number of things that, you know, I tip my hat to the kid Mingo for Charlotte, obviously 26-10, and don't want to take anything away from his ability to play. And then Bonky, their 7'2" guy, we knew going into the game what a tough pick and roll coverage that was. And then there was just a variety of things that kind of, I would call it a stew of manufactured mistakes that need to happen in order for us to be on the wrong side of that game. They happened. There were, like, you can't foul 20 seconds to go up 5. You can't foul 94 feet. Stop the clock. Give those guys 2 points. You know, there's a lot of things that have to go wrong, and unfortunately they all did. And you go back, you realize that our destiny is in our hands. There's, I think, 3 teams right now that are 2-0. We would prefer to be the 4th. I think Tulane, missing Temple, and then Memphis. And then I think the rest of us are all 1-1. And so it's one of those things where you got to learn. We're happy to get back home. We need to win and do a great job and make sure we're doing the things necessary in order to win at home.
Yeah, now that you do come home, you know, you start getting into the teaching moments. I'm sure that there was a lot of tape shown and everything like that. In this game, just kind of going back to Jacob's original point, you know, you're, you know, 10 minutes away from winning a basketball game, and then the perfect storm of, you know, 7-8 things had to happen in order for Charlotte to be able to do what they did. And it happened that way. You know, what do you take any, you know, positives away from what you saw out there? Or is it more so as you get back on the court, you know, today or whenever it is, to say, like, we got to be able to execute in these, you know, last minute situations? You know, what is it that you're teaching here?
Yeah, I mean, some of it is just a game management issue. You know, with 3 minutes to go, you're up 7. And there were two times that, you know, one time we just came down and just shot the ball 4 seconds into the shot clock. And it's just like, that is, it's unnecessary. And, you know, you kind of have to go through and just, you know, manage that with guys. The fouling from 94 feet, we have a chance to go up 7 with, you know, under a minute to go. We get an offensive goaltend and the discipline that's required there. And so, you know, we foul a 3-point shooter. I mean, and I'm not talking about the last play. And then again, there's some things that have to work in the other team's favor as well, from, you know, getting a call here or there. There's a number of things that have to work. So you go back and you learn from it, and you think about what's the next right thing to do.
We don't always get to see Wichita State head coach Paul Mills joining us here on Sports Daily. We don't always get to see, like, inside the players' minds. So take us there, because this, you guys have had these opportunities this year, and you've been able to come away with big wins in these moments, Northern Iowa, the UAB conference opener. And then there have been others where they haven't. How does this team, when you get them inside the locker room, when you get them to practice the next day, all those, like, what is the attitude they have toward attacking some of these things and making tough losses become tough wins?
Yeah, to be honest with you, this group has been great. Like, I mean, you haven't seen much in the way of repeatable errors. Like, we're going to be defined by how we respond to things. And, you know, shots are going to go in. There's going to be make and misses, right? And so we're not going to get caught up in that. Players don't always shoot it well. What we have to do is make sure we respond the right way. And I will tell you, this group has been great in their response and their approach and learning from those situations.
Coach, I'm curious, as we are in January, you know, we talked a lot about what, you know, November basketball meant whenever nobody knows anything. As you gradually go along, I know you talked about this, of what each month is, to lose the second conference game, obviously there's a lot of goals for you guys that are still on the table, you know, postseason, talk about a conference, you know, title run, potentially everything like that. There's still a lot of games left to play. How do you, as a, you know, as a, you know, coach and a human, balance the thought process of, like, these are must win, we got to do this in order to get to our goals, or it's just a game and it's January 3rd?
Yeah, I don't think in terms of must win, right? Yeah. I mean, I just think it's phony if you begin to think of outcome. You know, we're at the beginning of a year, people sit around and they choose goals, and I just think to myself, like, that is so fake. What you have to do is choose habits. And habits will determine whether or not you accomplish those goals. Just because you set a goal does not mean that it's happening. So what you have to focus on is, what are the habits? And your habits are really a lifestyle. Like, how committed are you to actually doing these type of things? So I just get focused on the habits. You know, we've got a ton of areas to grow. I know we're not even halfway through the season yet. And so this next game, game 16, will basically mark the halfway point, assuming that all you do is play in the conference tournament. But, you know, we have bigger plans than that. So you're kind of mindful about all of those things with not only new guys, but some young guys. You know, you got a guy in TJ Williams who's played all of 15 basketball games at this level, and very few of them, that's it. That's his fourth true road game. And so you just think through that entire process and how to manage all of that. But we're more focused on what are the habits, the things that we're doing on a day-by-day basis. And then the outcome will become the outcome, but the outcome is a product of the habits.
It's interesting, Coach. You bring up TJ Williams. I was kind of headed here next. Kenyon Giles, two great shooting nights. From three mostly, but his volume is high, and I'm sure you guys love it being high. What about when he doesn't make the shots, though? What is your preference if he's not hot? Where is the next? And maybe this is too simple, but what is option two? What is option three? How are you seeing that come together? And what are you thinking about the rest of that offense?
Yeah, it depends on the game. You know, if we think that there's an advantage in the interior, then we'll play in the interior. Yeah. If we think it's out of a pick and roll coverage, then we think, you know, hey, Dre and E-Man are really good here. If we think, hey, they're fanned out because they want to take away 3-point shooting, whoever that may be, probably, you know, you're dealing with Mike and you're dealing with KG, then you're finding, and they're really hugged up on a perimeter or interior standpoint because they're afraid of the physicality, then you think downhill. So this is honestly game to game. I mean, we're top six in the country, six in offensive rebounds, so teams are mindful of that. But, you know, every team, this is probably true of every team, we're top 10% in the country in transition. We need to find more opportunities from an organic perspective in transition. So I just think that the options vary game to game. And sometimes you just, you know, a particular player gets hot and you kind of have to go to that in a game and find different ways to get them. If you go back to KG's 8 threes in the UAB game, 6 of the 8 are just in transition. You know, they're just organic. And so some of this is just, even if a team is trying to do something and they're conscientious of a guy like that, you can still get guys shots simply by making sure you're playing with force.
Coach, you're exactly right that the only thing that you can do after a game like that is kind of just get ready for the next one. And it's a team you're familiar with in the Rice Owls. You know, what's it going to take to, you know, bounce back on Wednesday night?
Yeah, you know, they have a guy in Trey Broadnicks who's an experienced point guard, and then they put elite shooters out there. I wouldn't pay much attention to the Tulsa game. They had a bad night that particular night. The 6-point loss to Memphis is probably way more a recognizable team than what we'll see on Wednesday night. But, you know, again, we'll face a similar situation to what we faced at Charlotte. Just they don't have – their bigs aren't shooting as much as Bonke was and the 7-foot-2 player for Charlotte. But they do have terrific pick and roll, and then they can spread you out. So this will be a game to see what our growth is like from the Charlotte, just basically not defending the pick and roll very well to moving up here and defending Rice.
It is the conference home opener. It is coming right at us. You can get tickets, goshockers.com. It is a Wednesday 6:30 game against Rice, one of two home games this week. You guys also home against North Texas. Coach, give them hell. Let's see if we can get some big crowds out to the Roundhouse and get ready for January basketball. We're pretty pumped for it.
Jacob, TJ, thank you guys.
There goes Paul Mills, Wichita State head men's basketball coach, 1-1 to open conference play. 2-0 would be nice, should be nice, but 1-1 with two games coming up at home. I don't know what to make of the conference still, TJ. Coach brought it up. There's a couple 2-0 teams and everybody else is 1-1. That feels about right. You know, feels about right this year. I've tried to start catching some glimpses of the American every chance you get, you know, but was it Rice and Texas State? Who was Rice playing this weekend? I saw Rice for a minute. I don't even remember.
Right. Rice actually, they got at Tulsa and got eviscerated and then almost beat Memphis at home.
That's what it was.
You know, they're KenPom says they're one of the worst teams in the conference, but you almost beat Memphis at home. You know, that's something.
Well, that's kind of the thing, right? Like what are these teams? Charlotte's a good example of it. Charlotte was, you know, bad enough, I suppose, to be down 18 in the second half, but competitive enough to be able to put together a, you know, a run to get back into that thing. So, you know, what do you make of it? Rice, I don't know, man, they're going to be favored big time. That game against Tulsa, I think that might be, yeah, that's the one I saw a little bit of. It was the one on ESPNU. So I did see a little bit of that one. It was football. They played Texas State. But they got beat by, what was it, 50?
Yeah.
Was that one was on in the office, I think, before Wichita State. Yeah, so it was just kind of there, and we're just like looking up, and it's like, ugh. Yeah, and then you come back and you play Memphis tight. Like,
here's my Rice scouting report as I'm digging through their stats here. They've got a guy, number 24, 6'9", Jimmy Oladokun.
No.
I hope they're related.
Oladokun is I believe where that's at. Go home and play Memphis close to within six. But that game's Wednesday night. We'll have much more on that tomorrow. Hopefully the Shockers come out and win by 30. To be perfectly honest with you. It'll be kind of a football hour in hour number two. Should have Joshua Briscoe in to talk Chiefs. We'll get to the CFP, the NFL playoffs, all of it coming up. Sports Daily. Don't go away. Welcome back in, everybody, for another hour of Sports Daily. Glad to be with you here. Chiefs talk tonight on KFH, 6 o'clock, the Chiefs Kingdom Show. Should be the finale there. Tune in to 97.5, 1240 at 6 for that show. Listen online, kfhradio.com, or download the free Odyssey app and search KFH. Also, we should get, I think, Dan Patrick's back. We had the show a little bit last week. I think he's back today. So you get that true Dan Patrick to Jim Rome. Sports radio legendary block of programming right after we finish up being knuckleheads here on Sports Daily each and every day into the new year. So looking forward to that. That's coming up. We'll have football talk this hour. Certainly talk NFL, probably talk a little CFP. TJ's got his Royals hoodie on. Probably won't today get to the news that Matt Quatraro has been extended, but we'll get to that later this week, if not today. It's kind of a broader look at some things today as we make our way through. Whatever we do get to is on tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, now featuring the Dub event venue at WBC Delano. Perfect for graduation parties, meetings, reunions. Visit wichitabrew.com to begin your booking at the Dub event venue at WBC Delano, where groups gather. Thanks to Paul Mills for stopping by. If you missed anything with Shocker head coach, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. Could you imagine, TJ? We came into this Monday, Shockers 2-0, two road wins in the conference. Like, it was all right there. It was all right there. I still can't figure out how they lost that game.
I talked to Rachel about this in the office yesterday. I was back home on Saturday at my parents' house and just kind of casually watching some basketball, watched a little K-State, had the Shockers on. And then we left and went to dinner, and I was like, man, like, Kenny Giles is lighting him up. Like, he's playing great. And, like, people are texting me, like, Giles is nuts. Like, this dude is so good. This is so awesome. And then I just see my phone keep buzzing while I'm sitting at dinner, and it's like, man, Giles. And it's like, oh, my gosh, Boyd. And it's like, oh, my gosh. And I'm like, what, are they winning by 60? What's going on? And then I looked. I'm like, they lost that game. I left, and they were up by 20. What are you talking about? They lost that game.
Yeah, it's not.
Literally, like, if you rolled that out, if you took it from when they were up 18 points and rolled it out 100 times, they win it 99, probably 99.9. Like, the amount of perfect things that had to happen for Charlotte to do what they did is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's it doesn't make sense to be like, I don't even know how to make sense.
If you're ever, anybody's ever bored today, go to Twitter X and go look up Taylor Eldridge, because he's a real film junkie. He broke down all the significant moments, and it's like made up how many in a row within like a 2 minute stretch. It was like Wichita State blown coverage, wide open corner three, Wichita State foul from 94 feet away. It's like, what?
That's the thing. You got to just focus in. That's why I asked, Coach Mills, like, how does the team handle these things? And I think, well, I think we've assumed well. It's good to hear them say well, because that's back to the original point, very, very beginning of the show. In reality, hopefully, this game is nothing more than teaching moments, because it will not make or break what happens to them as far as the NCAA tournament goes. Nothing that happens in the American from a wins and loss perspective is going to impact, unless you're looking at whether the seeding of the conference tournament has an impact. They're going to have to win the conference tournament to get in. But in order to win the conference tournament, they have to figure out how to eliminate these stretches of games where it all just falls apart, because it happens in almost every big game. And we'll see if they can get it done. I mean, hell, the UAB game is great, but it's a huge comeback.
Exactly. Like, no, the Charlotte game was just inverse of every other game of the year. Yeah. Like, usually they get punched first. This time they got punched last.
Yep. So they've got some work to do. All the basketball teams have some work to do. Let's talk a little football. The NFL teams, no more.
Yeah. Did you know the Chiefs played yesterday? We haven't talked about them for a second.
There has never been a less meaningful Chiefs game in the decade plus that I've been here covering the Chiefs. There has never been a more meaningful Chiefs game than the one we saw yesterday.
I can't believe that Kingsley Suamataia hurdling a linebacker at the end of the game isn't viral. Like, how has nobody gotten that video out yet? Like, it is. I literally stood up and screamed when I saw that happen. I was like,
Yeah, I saw that one live. I was not watching that game live. I'm not a masochist. I had Red Zone on, kind of bouncing around, doing some things. And it's every time they got to the Chiefs game, I feel like it was a shot of Travis Kelce. Every single time that it came to that game, like, people don't think, like, people thought the Taylor Swift shots got out of control. Like, they had to have a Kelce cam. And I'm just like, guys, like, he has not announced he's retiring yet. He didn't announce it after the game. He didn't make it clear. Chris Jones said he's not gonna. Travis Kelce at no point has said, yeah, I think this might be it. He's got an expiring contract. This was kind of a run it back year. I've said this a billion times. Like, he's still good. Like, if he's ready to ride off into the sunset of his movie career. Like, he's still a really good football player. I'd love to have him.
It's pretty unreal that he's still third in receiving yards, a tight end. And, like, I couldn't tell you a game that he had over 50 this year. Like, it.
Well, that's just there aren't a lot of tight ends that do that anyway. But yeah, he drops more passes than he used to. No question. He's still one of the most pretty. Could you have imagined that offense this year without him? I mean, it would have been awful. It was awful. Right. But it'd have been awfuler.
That's the biggest thing I keep telling everybody is that, like, you just have to think, like, what's the replacement? Like, how much better is he than Noah Gray? You know? Like, how much better is he if they got Kyle Pitts? That's the one that everybody always talked about forever. Ooh. Like, that's the thing.
If they could somehow get Kelce to come back and play on a small contract, it'd be incredible. It'd be an amazing
whatever they do, they will. It's going to be a Kelce type. Like, they aren't going to go get a blocker, you know, like, they're
no, that, if, look, they got to change their offense anyway. They've got to change will, it, whether it's
but they do so much it. Stuff. They yeah. do so much stuff for the tight end. They're going to get somebody that's going to catch passes for
just
sure.
I would love to be wrong about this. But I don't think I am. Mahomes will miss Kelce an enormous deal. Like, he will, like, that, not having that, you know, kindred spirit where they just are always in each other's brains of where to be when a play breaks down. Like, that is so much a part of what Patrick Mahomes does, to not have, because Kelce never misses games, right? It's not like Kelce's ever unavailable. Kelce's always there. That's a huge loss for Mahomes. And if they can figure out a way to get Kelce back, it would be a great way to start the offseason.
I've gone so back and forth. Like, not really, because I've really been, he's always going to retire. Like, that's my thinking the entire year. And, like, the way, if they were good, then I think that I would have feel pretty confident that he would come back. But, like, it's a lot harder to come back first decision of coming back after you losing the Super Bowl to the coming back after you just lost six straight games to end the year. Like, I understand the whole thing about a sour taste in your mouth, but, like, especially if Patrick Mahomes isn't going to be there in the first couple of weeks, maybe, like, I don't think you can get him back after. Like, I don't think he's going to still. But, I mean, his comment yesterday were the most that he's ever talked about it. outside of the podcast, obviously.
Because he doesn't talk, yeah.
Yeah, but like, I mean, his comments kind of make you think that the door is actually open and there is a decision to make. I don't think he knows yet.
His brother, he and his brother love football as much as anybody's ever loved football. His brother physically had to stop. At the age Travis is now, Travis physically does not have to stop. That's been my thing with it. I don't know what's in his head, but watching the player physically, he is still way productive enough to be a big time NFL player. So it's not a physical thing with him, right? He can physically get it done. With his brother, it seemed to be. These guys love football. And I know Travis Kelce's 36 years old. We're watching Rodgers out there a decade older. And I know it's different positions, so that's not my point. My point is sometimes guys just love football and they don't want to stop doing it. Like, you only get to do this for so long. This guy loves football. He can still do it. You're just going to walk away from that? That would be hard to do. That would be really hard. Because once you're done, like, that's it. You can't ever do it again. Ever. You can go be in movies and TV. You can go do that for the next 40. That career will be significantly longer than your playing career. You only, like, there's a timer on this thing. So physically, I think he's still good enough. I think it still makes sense for the Chiefs to have him because they have Mahomes. And if you can get him to come play for like a regular, reasonable contract, hell yeah, you'd want that back. Now the ball's in his court and he'll decide. I don't think anybody knows. I will say that. Maybe Mahomes.
What's your lean right now?
60-40 retirement. 60-40 retirement.
I'd say I'm about there, yeah. Maybe 70.
But I think it's not a nothing for him to come back.
Yeah.
At all. All right, we'll come back. We'll ask Josh Briscoe what he thinks about it and the offseason and where to attack and all of those things. We return on Sports Daily.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And we welcome you back in, and we welcome in Joshua Briscoe. Chiefs Insider, Chiefs Radio Network, at JB Briscoe on X. That's it. We were just in the last segment. I've been covering the Chiefs for, I don't know, 11 or 12 years, something like that now. I don't know that I've seen a more meaningless game than the one we saw. So they did find a way to make it meaningful with the late long field goal and the draft position and the Kingsley Suamataia hurdle play. Like, there was, you know, the end was at least entertaining, but man, that game just, like, I couldn't find it yesterday. I just couldn't find the motivation.
I mean this when I say it. I really do. I can get worked up for preseason football. You give me a long off season, you give me training camp, and you give me a chance to see the rookies in the uniform for the first time. Man, I'm going to get there. I really am. I have done pregame and postgame shows for preseason games, for you know, obviously heaps of regular season games. I can get there. Man, yesterday was weird. Yesterday was not beautiful football. Not a good way to keep the good vibes going for Chris Oladokun. Good for Shane Buechele getting in there and slinging it a little bit. But no, I think, and I know this is tough because myself included, nobody wants to end the season with losses to the Broncos and Raiders at the end of a year that was already deeply frustrating. So I am not telling any fans that they need to be happy that the Chiefs ended the season that way. But the fact that all of that frustration and disappointment led to the number 9 overall pick instead of leading to the number 11 overall pick, that really might be the difference between pick your draft crush being there and not being there. That 9, 10, 11 cutoff is looking pretty important when you kind of see where those players fall. So that was a silver lining. I wish I could disagree with you, though. I mean, I like to think I brought game day effort for pre and post game, but the actual game itself was not a terribly fun watch.
The people kept asking me yesterday, is it, how are you going to frame these highlights to make people not want to turn their TV off? I'm going to give them no context and tell them it's the Super Bowl. And it was a great game down the stretch. Defensive battle, let me tell you. Kingsley hurdling a guy is the coolest thing I've ever seen, by the way. We can't gloss over that. It is insane. We'll do a little bit of a post-mortem now that it is officially over before we dig into what happens next for the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm curious your thoughts. I keep pulling out this, this analogy. If you roll this out 100 times, how many times do the Chiefs go 6-11 this year?
Oh, that is kind of fun. I mean, you end the season on a, what, 6-game losing streak? Probably, yeah. Like 2 out of 100 times. I mean, that feels extraordinarily unlikely. The thing that I really haven't thought about it in those terms, so I'm thinking out loud here, because I do think the end result in picking 9 and going 6-11 and all of that feels like a 10% of the outcomes kind of deal. I do think, though, it would be leaning a little bit too hard into the randomness to not also grapple with the fact that last year was also a 10% outcome. Last year was a 10% positive outcome. This might have been a 10% negative outcome. You include Patrick Mahomes tearing his ACL with a few weeks left in the season, and it's like, it's hard to come up with worse seasons than that when you're thinking about the future there as well. But I do think, the hard truth of the middle of the bell curve here was that the Chiefs were going to be a fringe battle for it playoff team that gets there and then maybe makes something happen. But I think we watched this team over the course of this year enough that even at full health, we know where their deficiencies were. We know that. I watched the ever-loving heck out of that Sunday Night Football game last night. At one point, Chris Collinsworth mentioned, if the Ravens don't make the playoffs, or if they make it and they exit early, it's going to be because they don't have a guy in the pass rush. And I was thinking, man, if the Ravens defense is getting those kind of disclaimers this last game of the season, Patrick Mahomes gives you a chance to win the Super Bowl by being on your roster. And they have coaches who have obviously been there and won it what feels like now a lot of times. They had some of those pieces that gave me real optimism before the season. And obviously, I thought they'd win the division and I thought they'd be a playoff team. No question about that. But I do think now, with the benefit of hindsight, this is on the very low end of what could have happened this year. But I do think that they were... the problems we saw were real, and they got unlucky. Might be the more concise way to say what I've been trying to say for the last several minutes.
Yeah, look, I think that's fair. And I think it's also fair to say the problems have been real for a while, and they got lucky.
Yep.
For a lot of seasons here. I think this year is fascinating for so many reasons, but to me, like, because what does it mean for next year? Right. And I've seen others say this, and I've thought about this a lot. Is this the break it down and not start over because you've got Mahomes? But is it the big breakdown, or, as Kelsey hasn't given an official decision on all these things, is this thing salvageable to still make a run? We know Andy Reid's coming back. What if Kelsey did come back? Can they tinker enough? The draft is obviously critically important, but how much do they need to reset here? Or not.
Obviously, the Kelsey piece is a huge part of it, because when you talk about I'm trying not to use the buzzword I want to get to here. When you talk about this period of time for teams resetting, if you will, we talk about resetting, retooling, and then the big one is rebuilding. This isn't going to be a rebuild. The rebuild is what you do when you're hiring a new head coach, maybe a new GM, definitely a new quarterback. The Chiefs aren't rebuilding. I think it's time to remodel. I think that's the word that I'm kind of latching into, is that the foundation is there. You're keeping most of the walls. A lot of the load-bearing beams are still in place. Although Travis Kelce leaving would definitely change that analogy. You would lose a load-bearing beam in this home. But ultimately, I think it's time to remodel the bathroom. I think it's time to remodel the kitchen. You love the house, and several of the rooms are perfectly fine as they are. You got the offensive line remodeled last year. You just need all the pieces to show up next year, and you're going to be just fine on the offensive line. But I think that there needs to be some remodeling where the running back room is going to look very different. Are the coaching staff turnover that we've talked about, are those changes going to happen? What is the wide receiver room going to look like? I think there is talent in that room. There's also a lot of guys not under contract in that room. They're going to have to make a big decision about Rashee Rice one way or the other here pretty soon. So I think that's the headspace that I'm in, where you do need real tangible changes and evolutions here. But I think to say it's anything more than a retooling or a remodeling is forgetting who the quarterback and the head coach are. So I do think it's going to be certainly an attempt to remodel on the fly and be there at the top of the division for next year. And the Chargers had a very impressive year. Here's a hot take for you guys in our final chat of the 2025 season. I'm more impressed with what the Chargers did this year than I was with the Broncos did this year, because the Chargers just got there without their two top shelf elite offensive tackles, and they did it with a lot of the year without all three of their top three tackles. And I'm just counting the days until the Broncos have a disappointing playoff exit, even with the first round bye. I just couldn't believe in anything less. So all that to say that the division is a lot better, and that's going to hold. What Justin Herbert has shown and what Harbaugh has done for that team, that's real. The Broncos are going to be annoying. I just don't think they're going to win anything meaningful. But I do think that they intend on being right there back in the mix next year. I think that is reasonable, too.
I want to dig deeper into the Travis Kelce conversation, because yesterday it was really the only thing that made it nationally relevant, as we had the Kelce cam on for the entire game we just brought up in the last segment. We saw more Travis Kelce than we ever have in a football game yesterday, because nobody knows if it's his last one or not. He talked about it, and it felt like it was the first time that he's like truly like – not giving you the buzzword retirement answers. And, you know, the way that he spoke about it makes you feel like, I don't think he knows what he's going to do.
I know it sounds kind of crazy, and I kind of roll my eyes a little bit when Andy said at the podium, like, yeah, I know we just haven't talked about it. Kelce, what is his contract up? It's like, I don't think Andy Reid has an answer from Travis Kelce, to be clear. I think I'm with you. I almost have to believe that Kelsey's telling the truth when he says, hey, man, I'm going to figure it out now. I am singularly focused through this football season. I am playing as if I will have no regrets if this is how it ends for me. I'm paraphrasing now, of course. But I'm going to play as if this could be the end, because I want to put my best effort out there anyway. And this is like a terribly, this is a huge stretch of a metaphor. But like, I was doing the post-game show last night, like it's the last time I'm ever doing post-game, because you just don't know. You just don't know what the future holds. You want to put out a good effort. If you're not, you go, all right, well, this is the end of a chapter at least. This is at least the end of the 2025 season. So with all of that out there, I do think it's interesting how hard Chris Jones has just leaned in and like, no, he's coming back. I don't know, but he'll be there. And Nate Taylor of ESPN and one of my co-hosts over on Only Weird Games, he talked, I think it was after the Titans game, I believe, where he said he looked over. It might have been Thanksgiving, but I think it was after the Titans game. In the locker room, he looked over and Clark Hunt was talking to Travis Kelce in the locker room. And Nate was obviously, you know, in the way that only he can, kind of filling in some of the gaps of being like, Travis, you love this, right? You'll miss this if you don't play next year. Come on back.
That's a good Nate Taylor impression.
I would have gone to a higher register, but I didn't know if your viewers and listeners were ready for that register on your show yet. You got to build a tolerance. Not a tolerance to Nate. Easy man to love. Can be a tough man to listen to once you get into the dog territory there. But I really do think it makes a lot of sense for the Chiefs to say, Trav, you don't want to go out like that, right? Like, you don't want the last guy who ever throws you a pass in the NFL to be not Chris Oladokun, but Shane Buechele, who, by the way, it seems like they have, like, a good relationship. No shade to any of them. They're not Patrick Mahomes. Like, your guy wasn't there, and this season was just so disappointing on so many levels. He obviously has plenty to give. He obviously could be a real... God, I guess number two weapon on this offense next year. I don't want him to be that high in the pecking order. I didn't want him to be the number one option this year and last year, but that's not his fault, right? Like, this is something else. I'll shout out Seth Kaiser, also from Only Weird Games, where he says, look, if Kelce steps away, it's not all bad because it forces the Chiefs into that next era of retooling of how do we play offense without Travis Kelce? And my, like, slight pushback on that is that they still could have figured that out these last 2 years. But there were injuries last year, and so you just kind of build the entire plane out of, what, 66 years of age of Kareem Hunt and Travis Kelce last year. You build the plane out of them last season. You come into this year and you want Rashee Rice to take the baton from Travis Kelce. He's not out there the first six games. He doesn't really ever take the baton fully in that time between. They still need to have an answer, regardless of what Kelce does. They need to have an answer for what is the offense without Travis Kelce. But if he does want to come back and do this one more time, man, I would be very, very grateful for another season of that. I'm very, very grateful to have seen as much of Travis Kelce as we already have.
I love your pushback on that. I couldn't agree more. It's not Travis Kelce's fault that he's been leaned on too much at this stage of his career. What is he going to do? Not run a route? Not right. Be open? Right? Like, that's not his problem. The fact that he is still the number two option in the offense, and a lot of times this year is number one, it's absolutely out of necessity. And so, like, just to pull that away and be so ready and willing to pull that away because what? Because he drops a few more passes than he has before? He's still the third most productive tight end in football this year as a receiver. Yeah. Okay? Like, what is Mahomes without Kelce? And I think that is a fair question that never gets asked. Yeah. Mahomes wasn't awesome this year, not by his own standard, right? He was maybe a slight step back. Like, what is he without Kelce? We don't know that answer. I don't want to find it out yet as somebody who watches the team, because Kelsey's still plenty good. I agree with you. Run the ball a little bit more. Don't focus so much on Kelce in the offense. But quite frankly, does Mahomes know how to not focus on Kelce so much in the offense? And that's going to be a hard lesson to learn if it's one we have to learn at some point.
Yep. And at some point we will. We will have to see what that looks like. If that's 2026, 2027 or whatever. I feel good about Mahomes' ability to answer that question when it arrives, but we haven't answered it yet, which, again, that also not Mahomes' fault. The Travis Kelce's ageless, right? Like, that pairing is as incredible as it's been. Let's keep that together. Just to illustrate the point, I don't have this updated with yesterday's snap counts yet, but last year, Travis Kelce played 84% of the Chiefs' offensive snaps. This year, not including yesterday, he's played 81%, and I think he played more than 81% yesterday, so I think that number might rise a little bit, call it 81, 82%. Those were the highest numbers of highest percentages of snap counts he's had since he played 82% in 2021 and 86% in 2020, 90s in the 90s before that. But last year was a workload increase over the last four seasons prior. And again, that's out of necessity, but that would have still been necessary without him. And they don't win the Super Bowl, or excuse me, they don't get to the Super Bowl last year without Travis Kelce. I don't know what they do going forward without him. Again, if you'd seen the bright, shining star of Rashee Rice continue to rise this year, if you would have seen him really kind of take over in the way that we hoped he might be able to take over, all of this feels a little bit easier because there's an easy answer for Patrick Mahomes in the offense. Hey, you can just always find Rashee Rice. He's going to get you 8 yards, and if he breaks a tackle, he's going to get you 20. Hey, Xavier Worthy, if you find him down the sideline, you're going to have chunk plays at your fingertips as often as you find him. Hey, Tyquan Thornton looked pretty good. Same offer to him. But ultimately, none of those things, Hollywood Brown in the intermediate, none of those things came to fruition in the fashion that you would have needed to see them to really believe that you're ready for the post-Travis Kelce era.
Josh, we're going to talk a lot in the coming months up until April, and I'm sure we'll talk to you about it one time as we get ready for the draft. But in the 3 minutes we have left in this segment, are they taking a running back or a pass rusher or something else?
I've got a couple chips on something else, TJ. I have been a wide
receiver. We're hanging up right now.
I'll talk to you guys later then, I guess.
No way. I knew he does.
We haven't spent enough time together yet, Jacob. I always want another wide receiver. Look, they have to address running back. I am not saying going the next year with the same running back room. But if you go ahead, I can talk about Breece Hall here and have the hometown crowd, right?
Yeah,
hey, look, if it's Breece Hall and a day three draft pick, if it's Tyler Algier and a day two draft pick at running back, I'm willing to kind of build the boat in a different fashion at running back. Jeremiah Love's a great player. I'm not holding my nose in the Jeremiah Love conversation. You just have so few opportunities to get a blue chip game changing player at number 9 overall here. And if either of those two wide receivers are there, or I think either of those top two pass rushers are there, that's where I would go. And frankly, I might actually go pass rusher over wide receiver, but I am so interested in the specifics of these players. And I've got months of catch up to play here as well. But do you need to have octopus arms for Steve Spagnuolo, or is great college film enough to be worthy of a top 10 pick in this defense? I think the thing they needed the most this year was pass rush. And if you have a chance to solve that at 9, I would be perfectly happy with that. But I've also been wanting to hear the commissioner say, with the whatever pick in the draft, the Chiefs select whoever, wide receiver Ohio State, because that's always a good answer. And I want that, and I want that big X outside wide receiver in this offense. You talk about moving on from Travis Kelce. That would be an evolution of the offense to get a Carnell Tate type out on the outside that Patrick Mahomes can lean on in a way he's never leaned on a wide receiver. Not in terms of just general usage, but that body type, that build. So I am going defensive line and wide receiver are my tier one needs and values in that top 10 pick. If it's Jeremiah Love, it'll be Jeremiah Love, and we'll I'm sure I'll have a lovely time with that. But if it is him, he has to be Bijan Robinson. Like that is the expectation. He can't be a top 12 running back in the NFL. He's got to be top 3. And that's a tough thing for a young running back to be. I'm sorry I offended you so much, Jacob. I've had a great time with you guys this year. I didn't want to end on such a sour note.
We're gonna go find the new insider.
I just, you know, how many years in a row can you spend top 2-3 round picks on receivers, I guess?
Let's find out!
Let's do it. They're going to need one a corner, too. We're going to have to do this again because now we just opened a whole can of worms. We will at some point. Josh, we appreciate it all year. We'll get you in here from time to time to discuss some of these things. We appreciate it greatly.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me all season. We'll chat again soon.
Oh, man. There's going to be so much to get to with the Chiefs in this offseason, and we'll have lots of time to have it, far more than we normally do, a month more than we normally do. We appreciate Joshua Briscoe's visits all year long. We'll get him in a little bit in the offseason to discuss some of these things. The beauty of pick 9 and the beauty of that Daniel Carlson 60-yard field goal is pick 9 gives you a chance at a really good player. And while I would prefer them not go a receiver again, if Jamar Chase is sitting there,
fine. I know.
You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't like getting that high in the draft, which even as Mahomes got hurt, seemed like a little bit of a pipe dream, right? That they would be able to get that high into the draft. You really just the most important thing is to not screw it up. Right. You haven't had a chance to take your Mahomes, Kelce, Jones, whatever, Creed, Humphrey, Trey Smith. Like, it has to be that kind of hit, whatever it is. And then you sort it out later. If you end up with a position that's not necessarily a need, but it's a Pro Bowler every year, like, who's going to be mad at that?
No, I mean, you can make an argument for every single position on the field because there's a need at every single, like Hollywood Except Brown is on an expiring deal. Like you can make an argument. They could draft any position.
Is the only thing they don't need.
Correct. Like there is an opening everywhere on the field.
Everywhere. So just don't mess the pick up. Get the pick right. Stop. Yeah. They have not had a good history of drafting for need. I mean, let's be honest. Drafting for need has been a not good thing for the Chiefs over the years. outside of this year, we hope, with Josh Simmons. Although, even if he wasn't a need to fall in that far, they're probably taking him anyway. So we'll see. There's a lot of time to think about that. There's less time for now 14 other teams that don't have anything to worry about other than their next playoff game. So yesterday was, not only was it like it was the most difficult, I think, to get up for a Chiefs game that I felt in about 12 years. That was as bad a week 18 as I can remember.
There was like three good games, basically.
There was nothing of ultra significance. We got the one game on Saturday, which was a play-in game that wasn't actually a play-in game. But we didn't know that at the time, so it was fine. And then yesterday, obviously, that Sunday
Seahawks,
night football.
That Seahawks game was significant.
It's a seeding game. Seeding game, right? It's fine. Like, there were seeding games yesterday. But as far as, like, I can't miss that.
Saints Falcons was a play-in game for other teams. That was fun. I watched that game.
It was I don't know. I was now, and then you get to Sunday night football.
Yeah.
Sunday night football was awesome. I am in this weird place. I don't know. I can't even describe to people. Every fiber of my being would rather have the Ravens in the postseason than the Steelers. I like Lamar Jackson. I love Derrick Henry. Like, all their players, I like a whole lot more. And I cannot quit finding myself fascinated and sort of pulling for this Aaron Rodgers, Mike Tomlin story. And I don't like Aaron Rodgers.
I know.
He's fun to watch. I like the player. I don't like the holding the league hostage the last few years and all of those things. But I do really like Mike Tomlin as much as I don't particularly like the Steelers. And their throw the bird to the world. It's been hard for me not to like get invested in that.
Like, and I'm with you. Aaron Rodgers made 99% of the country dislike him, basically, during
Is great. Sports villains are great.
Yeah. Everything that's happened over the last, half decade with Aaron Rodgers has made the country kind of turn on him. And then this year, you're like, oh, I got to watch another year of Aaron Rodgers. He's going to the Pittsburgh. What's this going to – and then, like, you see the video of him last night of, like, doing the post-game interview with Stark and then, like, walking the locker room. And he's, like, grinning like a little kid. And you're like – man, I'm kicking my feet. This is awesome. He's 42 years old. He's going to the pool. This is cool. Like, I'm rooting for Aaron Rodgers. Like, it has been a 180 of emotion about Aaron Rodgers. And like, I am with you. I think that like the casual fan is going to be pulling for the Steelers because they want to say, can Aaron Rodgers do this again? There's no way, right? He's 42.
And he is. And here they are. And he's making big plays yesterday. That game last night was stupid. Missed extra point, missed field goal. Like, what on earth were we watching there? That was just a very bizarre set of circumstances. It was by far the most interesting thing that happened in the NFL yesterday, in my opinion. It was very no offense to Kingsley Suamataya's hurdle play, which I was also heavily invested in. You're not alone in that. I was fascinated by that.
I love that the broadcast, like, it was Kyle Long, former Chief, who was on the call. As we got that CBS crew, like, they were kind of like putting a bow on it, and they're like, one final play could be the last play of Travis Kelce's career. Let's see what the Chiefs have. They're looking for something, blah 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 blah. And then that happens, and both of them are just, oh my gosh, he hurdled him. And it's like, that play means nothing, but it was the coolest thing that anybody's ever seen.
It was pretty awesome. I kept thinking, like, he's going to return this. He's going to score a touchdown and cost him a draft. I don't know what the alternative was. Like, it was either ninth pick.
I think it was 9 or 10.
But I'm pretty even sure. If it was 10, it's like, come on, man. But that was fun. So real quick today, because when we'll get more into this tomorrow, but it's hard to come in on a Monday after the CFP has played out and not at least get some take on it. We'll have a longer discussion about the bye thing. I have for 2 years now just been floored at that. I hope 1 in 5 changes it just in general, like these teams that have the long buys to me. And I don't know if this speaks to how good Indiana is. I think it probably does. Yeah. And to how well coached they are, but it is clearly a disadvantage to those teams. But it's one that you want because it means you don't have to play the game the week before to get there. Just play him sooner. It's too long.
Yeah, but it is the easiest fix.
It needs to switch, and I hope it will with 16 games. I mean, it were 16 teams because you just I just would rather not have a bye, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what 16 teams will fix, is that you'll eliminate the byes and you get.
But I still think you got to play them sooner.
I'm with you on that too. It does start too. I mean, it needs to be the week after conference championships.
But let me. But I think the better point for this is, you go back to mid August, and we have the conversations with everyone that says, "Oh, 12 teams are too many. It doesn't really matter." And I would love to have a quick conversation with everybody in that camp and tell them, okay, well, the Final Four this year is going to be Miami, Ole Miss, Oregon, and Indiana. You kidding me?
I mean, it's I understand the argument. I mean, not that argument, but
three
there is an argument.
Of the four teams would not there, have been there.
I
the
know, but days. There's an argument that, to be made about, like, man, like, you let Miami get beat by Louisville and they're in your Final Four, you know, like at what point, like,
yeah, they earned it.
I mean, they did based on how it is now, but I mean, it really I don't know what the word is, de-incentivizes the regular season.
It does not in the moment. Think about that exact same philosophy in any other sport that you watch.
I know.
We were just saying how interesting it is that the Steelers are in.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, was Sunday Night Football less interesting because we don't do that with any other sport. We pick the one where nobody plays anything close to the same schedule, where it's the most exclusive to get into the playoff to begin with. We pick that one to say, oh, well, but the regular season doesn't mean as much. None of these teams played the same teams.
It's hard. I don't know. I'm with you, but I think that there is a legit argument to be made on the fact of, like, and it's different. I agree that every other playoff doesn't follow that same standard, but in a sport where there's 130 teams, like, it had, like,
well, the answer to that is to expand it to even more playoff teams, which I get. But,
it also gives the chance of, like, K-State could have, Texas Tech's a bad example because they were in, but who did BYU lose to? I don't even remember. KU last year. BYU was going to be a playoff team, and KU had the opportunity. They went to Provo and beat them and knocked them out. And, like, that's what the argument is, that, like, to make the season still significant for others that aren't going to be in the 12, basically. But I don't know. Football's good, and I like watching more football games, and that's what it really boils down to. I'm fine with expanding.
I think we'd be more invested in the CFP if it started sooner. It's just you have to wait too long for it. I think I use the term as that, like, we overthink college football. Don't have a bye, play home games or not. Who really cares? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, just the end result should always be about finding the best team at the end of the season, not who was the best team in week 8, not who was the best team in week 1, who is earned and become the best team in college football. We have chances to see, you know, Indiana's kind of wire to wire had a case, right? Ole Miss is a fantastic story. Miami is a fantastic story. You know, Oregon's there. Oregon, I don't know if Oregon should be the favorite in this thing because of the experience, but, like, just look at these four teams and all the different paths that these teams have taken to get to this point. And let it remind you that it getting to a championship comes in all kinds of different ways. And in every other sport we watch, including other college sports, including college football at other levels, we let this thing organically happen and we have these great stories develop over time. We have limited ourselves forever in Division I college football of giving ourselves these incredible stories to get to a championship. And I'm very glad, as sad as I am, that the Big 12 is not represented in these final four teams. I'm very glad that we have four teams here. One of them. If you polled 100 insiders, those insiders, I'll bet you 90% of them had one of these teams being in the final four. And it's Oregon. That's it. Maybe Ole Miss if you had an SEC hump.
What are you talking about? Indiana's the best team in the country.
No, I'm saying before the season started. before the season started. Not late in the season. But Indiana's a wagon. Indiana's clearly the best team. I'm talking about back in August, if you have that question. Oregon would be the only one. And it's awesome that we've allowed ourselves a chance to get to these four teams. We'll talk more about it tomorrow, though. All right, that does it for us here on Sports Daily. Again, you can go back and listen for free on the Odyssey app. If you missed anything, Paul Mills chatted in the first hour, Joshua Briscoe on the Chiefs. Great conversations. You can find both of those on demand through the Odyssey app. We will have Wyatt Thompson in tomorrow to talk a little K-State. Nothing major with college basketball tonight, but we get right back at it. I love conference season, TJ, because most nights here now, we're going to have games in conference play, and that's the best.
I got to get to bed early tonight. We got the late one for KU tomorrow, so that's going to draw our attention. No Monday Night Football tonight. I might go to bed at 7 o'clock tonight.
I am with you on that. But we'll be back here tomorrow, ready to rock and roll. We'll get more into this college football thing and in the NFL playoffs as well. So plenty of time to do it. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. For Max, for TJ, I'm Jacob. We'll see you tomorrow.